What really makes a world is the passage of time. And time adds complexity. How do you manage all the stuff you're creating in a world without losing track of it and keeping it interesting for your reader? Let's talk about progression in world building.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Worldcraft Club podcast, a show for writers, dungeon masters, and other storytellers who want to create rich, immersive settings for their audiences to get lost in time and time again. I'm your host. I am joined by my illustrious co-host, Seth. We've got Dave over there operating as our producer, and AJ somewhere in the middle of nowhere being our editor. So we are recording for you live from Penn's Woods in Seth's spacious dungeon, and we're going to start off today talking about progression and development in world building. This is one of those things where, is it really a world if it doesn't have a history? If it doesn't have a future that it's going to? Does it need some sort of cataclysm in the past that happened in order to make it a proper world building property? But what we're talking about really is a lot of times we think about world building as a three-dimensional question, but we're going to go into the fourth dimension. Time. What? How do things change? How do things progress? How do you track that? Do you just ignore it like Star Wars and just take a bunch of the plating off the droids and say they were less advanced, I guess, even though they're all still sapient? How do we handle this? Seth, you said you had strong opinions and thoughts on this, and like I'm eager to hear them. What do you think?
I do have strong opinions and thoughts on this, partly because there's an entire subgenre of fantasy and science fiction that has emerged specifically to deal with the problem or the opportunity around progression.
Yeah.
And I'd love to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
But I also think that this idea that there needs to be a history and that there needs to be a future in a story or in your world building is a trap. And hopefully I don't start any fights with this.
No, but do it. It'll be great.
But I don't know. But I think that where the mass majority of authors fail in their writing is in their lack of consideration for knock-on effect.
Okay.
The reason that world building is really, really hard when you start to expand scope is that there is always knock-on effect. If I say that one person has a power that works in a specific way, this is the problem with magic systems, right?
Oh, yeah.
I have someone whose power works in a particular way, then all of a sudden it becomes a question of why aren't other people doing X, Y, or Z, which is a natural knock-on effect or a natural progression from what you just explained.
Yeah.
A great example would be if you have a giant city, right? Yeah, and you say, this is how the politics operates in this city. But then you want your character to get something done quickly. If you just described a highly bureaucratic system, then now you have to spend the majority of your book talking about how your character is wading through red tape, or you need some way for them to cut through it that won't get them immediately crushed under the weight of this giant bureaucratic system.
Now that's the thing, is that if you're writing the book about bureaucratic acumen and part of the satisfying, and to be fair, legal procedurals and things like that are often truly drawn upon that idea about following rules and like making sure you have evidence and all this kind of stuff. Like there is actually, I'm sort of making fun of it, but there is a case to be made for that. Legal trauma. But it's also, I think you're right. It's a scope problem, right? It's a scoping problem. And you have to decide what you want to focus on. If you want to talk about how world building develops, like an interesting one was lightning bending in Avatar The Last Airbender. And then in Legends of Korra, they had it where everybody was lightning bending to power the city. And that was a cool concept, but lightning bending was introduced as a very, very specialized art form that only certain firebenders could actually accomplish. It required a lot of skill and a lot of devotion and time, and they turned it into a commodity. But at the same time, there was a logic to that, that it made sense, right? Like people would just
suck lightning out of the air. There is, but that also creates a serious problem, right? Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about time. Technology does not develop in a linear way. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even develop in necessarily a purely exponential way, right?
It's staccato.
It's fits and bursts,
yeah.
Right? And so you'll have something that happens, and the amount of change that it creates in a society is so drastic that the society looks nothing like it did 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, right? Let alone 100 years. And so if you're in a story, or if you're writing a story, and you have some piece of technology that's giving your character an advantage, or you have them discover something. A really popular thing right now in fantasy novels is introducing some piece of technology to make things easier. Mm. The speed at which something like that would disseminate and people would start replicating it in order to make money or gain power, or somebody would come in and crush it because they have vested interest in it not existing, it makes it very hard for you to introduce change into a story without changing the nature of the story itself. So Dune is a great example of this. Yeah. Why are there no computers in Dune?
Because he didn't want to write about them.
Exactly. But when you start a story and you introduce a concept like technology or like an advance in magic, the story becomes about that thing. It stops being about the character and the journey that they're on. And it becomes about the thing, or at least that's the danger, right? Mm. It becomes about the advancement and the impact that change has.
Yeah.
Because I'm about to get a little bit nerdy here. As a writer, you want to limit the agents of change in your story. Mm. Because if you don't limit the agents of change, it becomes really hard for the reader to understand who the story is about.
Yeah.
Okay. And so typically we have a couple characters, maybe one, maybe two, maybe three, who have either parallel or competing character arcs. Mm. And the story is about the change that is being wrought in their life. Or if we're following a flat character arc, it's about the change that's being wrought around them that character is introducing.
Yeah.
But as soon as you introduce a significant event or a significant piece of technology or a significant advancement in magic, what happens is your agent of change is no longer the main character. It's instead this other thing, right? And it becomes incredibly hard not to introduce opinions and other people's thoughts about whether such this thing is good or bad or not.
Yeah.
Right? And so it creates this problem as a writer that I think a lot of writers just don't know how to deal with well.
It's extremely tricky. Like, I can see that, because adding this other dimension of time into this whole situation just adds complexity. It multiplies the complexity that we're dealing with, right? So you're going to have anything you introduce, you now need to have an understanding of not just where it is in time and what it's doing, but where it is then going to go and what its natural progression is. And so you've got this thing about like agents of change. One thing that I would throw into that, and I'll put this before you as an idea, is if your world building has themes that closely tie to the growth and the change in the characters, then you're cooking with gas. Here's what I'm thinking. Arcane, it's on my bingo card for a long time. I can't wait for season two. Netflix produced it. Incredibly well done, based on League of Legends. And what had happened was they had a time skip between the third episode and the fourth episode. Significant story beats occur, but there's a time skip, and there is some technology that is being developed in the early stages of the time skip that is then expanded upon and has a dramatic impact on the changing world.
Hmm.
But this change in the world and the way it's presented closely ties into, one, the main story, but also the individual character arcs that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It plays a role in the development and growth of all these different characters.
Yeah.
And Because of that, they're able to display this change in a way that's not just realistic, but narratively really compelling.
So I haven't seen Arcane, but I'm interested. Is the scope of the actual story broad, or is it narrowly focused on those characters and their arcs?
I would argue that it's actually pretty tight on the characters. The world building is incidental around it, I would argue. Dave, did you watch that as well? Sorry, just like bringing you in here in the middle of this. What would you say? Would you agree with that?
I think it was pretty tightly concentrated on what characters were up to.
Yeah, but then like the world building itself fed into the conflict really
that
nice.
We had characters that were avatars for different like classes.
Exactly.
The world was represented in the cross-section of characters.
And that is the only way to do it well.
Yeah.
Because when you introduce something that has widespread ramification, you have to, as a storyteller, either make the story about the widespread ramification, or you just have to exclude everything else, right? You have to just completely ignore everything else that's happening in the world, even though the changes there are significant, because that's not the story you're telling. And this is where, it's tricky, and we start to divide. A lot of times in this podcast, we come together as a storyteller and a world builder.
Yeah.
We're moving towards the same point.
Oh yeah.
In
yeah,
this
yeah, yeah.
case, we're almost starting to move apart.
Yeah.
Because a world builder is going to say, no, I want to know what technology does to my world. I want to know what the major ramifications are for introducing gunpowder or introducing a new kind of magic or introducing steam engines. But for a storyteller, that's not what the story is about. The story is about characters. The story is about change. And maybe it's about the change in a city. But if that's the case, then you never go outside of that city.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's exactly what they did. They never left the city.
Right.
In Arcane. It was one of the things, and they hint at a lot of things happening around outside. Again, all tied into the characters' arcs, their personal journeys. And this is the kind of thing is, I think introducing a time skip is just an incredibly challenging thing if you wish for like world building, unless you're Star Wars. Because the Old Republic is exactly the same as the New Republic. And it's all it is, they just were like, let's take the plating off the droid so you can see more exposed wires, because they haven't developed droid plating yet. But all the droids are sapient still. And why? Because we still want it to be Star Wars, but it's like they didn't.
Right.
The goal is they just wanted to Star Wars, but with a slightly different aesthetic and with not exactly the same problems. And so they wanted to tell it in the same world, but tell a story that didn't involve any of the characters of prior editions. So they created the Old Republic. But that's not the case with a lot of the stories where you have a through line through it. There are some big stories and narratives that go between the Old Republic and like Star Wars era. I don't know how many they've rejected now, but like it's, with however they're tying that together, there were threads. They were mostly thin world-building threads for eagle-eyed fans. They were Easter eggs. They weren't an actual story progressing. I think one of the things that I think this was flubbed, if I'm honest, is Mistborn, Brandon Sanderson stuff. I love Brandon Sanderson. Magic systems, amazing. Politics, garbage, hot garbage. It was just a train wreck. It was so confusing and just really poorly executed in his Mistborn trilogy, because it's not what he wanted to talk about.
Right.
He wanted to talk about the magic system, but he introduced the politics and leadership because he wanted this arc, and he had a sense of it, but it ruined, I want to say, Elend's arc in it.
So,
like, in my view.
So again,
and I don't want to throw shade at Sanderson. I'm sorry.
No, for sure. He's a great writer.
In the comments, because he is a great writer.
He's a great writer.
On this, it bothered me.
I think that point, that's not what he was interested in. That's not what he wanted to write about.
Yeah.
He wanted to write about something else.
So it shouldn't have been included.
The problem, problem is when you introduce any sort of power dynamic, politics is a power dynamic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Economics
it's a system.
Is a
You're
power dynamic.
A system.
That's right.
Yeah.
Magic, power dynamic. Technology, a power dynamic.
Yeah.
Right? Because as soon as all of these are systems where one person, one character has advantage or can gain advantage over another, And there are a few things that never change. And one of the main ones is that humans always seek power.
Yeah.
Which is why when we get a character who chooses not to seek power, it's a significant thing in a story, right? Because everybody else is expected to seek power. And that's where introducing these different things, whether it's a political system, whether it's a magic system, whether it's new technology, whether it's economics, whenever we introduce them, we automatically start introducing people seeking power. And when we introduce people seeking power, we're introducing conflict. And when we introduce conflict, we introduce the necessity for change, right? Because somebody has to win, somebody has to lose, or everybody has to lose. And so from just a story perspective, when we include these, here's my strong opinion.
Yeah.
A lot of the reason that people's stories just don't work is because they don't understand the world-building ramifications of, or rather the storytelling world ramifications of the world-building that they do. This is why less is almost always more. Reducing the complexity, making things simpler, being willing to hand wave stuff is almost always going to allow you to tell a cleaner and better story that focuses on the things you want to actually talk about, as opposed to introducing all of this stuff that you have to deal with.
And this is where it comes down to boundaries, right? This is a new exploration of this concept of boundaries. Before we went live, we were talking a little bit about how this concept that boundaries actually expand your freedom to talk about something.
Yes.
Because you will get yourself into a trap if you have to deal with politics in your world building when you weren't really equipped or really even interested in talking about it. You just included it for a scene because you wanted there to be a ball scene and you wanted there to be some complexity and some nuance in the ball scene. And then suddenly you have a political system to manage as the thing goes on. A really interesting thing about this is that whatever you're making, you're going to create a million and one, let's say, echoes of a system, right? Because the city is going to have some sort of leadership. You may want to talk about the city.
Yeah.
You may not want to talk about council politics. It seems needful to include some of these elements.
Sure.
How do you get away without needing to then jump the whole enchilada?
Sure. You know, so if you want
dive in, create
the best example, in my opinion, of a modern writer who did this perfectly, Terry Pratchett's Discworld.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
The way Anak Morpork, which is the main city in Discworld he talks about, there are lots of big cities, but this is the main one that he talks about. The way that it runs is genius because he sketches enough of an outline and he introduces characters who are involved in things and then gives you no detail.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter that he doesn't give you detail because the characters simply never encounter those things. They just run in the background, right? So a great example of this is the Golden King, who is in charge of all of the waste management of the entire city. And you encounter him a couple of times, and it's mentioned what he does. There's no reason for Terry Pratchett to go into detail about how that system actually runs, how you have a medieval city that doesn't have waste everywhere.
Yeah.
Right? Instead, he just makes him incredibly rich because he's the only person who's willing to deal with it.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised at what people lose when they're going to the bathroom. Right? And that's it. And that's all he gives you. Right? But he introduces him as an interesting character. He mentions a little bit about what he does. And then he never bothers explaining how any of it works. He never tells you where the waste goes. He never tells you how it's collected, right? He doesn't tell you any of that stuff. The same is true for the Thieves Guild when he introduces it. The same is true for the political system.
Yeah.
He cuts through it. He has a tyrant and he says, this guy's in charge. And anybody who doesn't, and they're nobles and blah, blah, blah.
One man, one vote.
Exactly.
I'm a man, I have a vote.
That is, yes. And so what he does is he takes this incredibly complex world-building problem, and because he doesn't want to talk about it, he just simplifies. He just cuts through everything.
Like, and here's the thing, though, is that's actually incredibly realistic. And the reason why it's realistic is because most people can't actually tell you how nearly anything works around them.
That is,
they just know that
true.
It works. Very it's like, true. Don't know where the garbage goes unless you like look into it. You
right.
don't know how, where the stormwater goes unless you look into it.
Right.
It's like you have to sit there. And unless the story is interested in that detail, and sometimes those like little world building details are like, they're interesting. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? But they don't necessarily need expanded on. And I think that's, I don't know. I had a really fun time. I was doing a TTRPG game and I was running a Traveler game on the server.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I just pulled out my butt was there's this race called the Vargr, and they lap up their drinks with their tongues because they are like dog-like people. It would be hard to drink a hot beverage if you had that. And the reason this was important is because I basically based the setting that they're in, and Dave, you can't tell any of them this, on Cornwall, where I live. And they drink tea a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, how would they drink tea? And I really like this idea that everybody just has a bowl of hot tea and they would hold it and they would wait while it steeped and cooled. And part of the tradition would be holding the bowl
mm-hmm.
and like talking until it cooled. And there's actually like lots of traditions in other cultures that hearken to this sort of preparation of food and it taking
yep.
time. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do, because that makes
sense. It's a sort of tea ceremony.
Yeah, it's a polite tea ceremony. I just had it as background information
yep.
during the scene and felt no need to elaborate. I didn't create a tea drinking system. I just
yeah.
showed people like what they do.
And I think that that's okay.
Yeah.
Right? I think that one of the differences between an experienced author and an inexperienced author is how much of a need you have to explain. The more experienced an author becomes, the less they have a need to justify themselves or to explain,
yeah.
right? They are telling a story, and they do not need a reader to validate it,
mm.
right? They are telling the story.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I really do love Pratchett's way of dealing with some of these complex systems. And one of the things that he does, just like you're talking about, sharing a specific detail
yeah.
that feels like it's real and it makes sense.
Yeah.
He would often introduce a single character for the story to interact with from a given system. And so you only ever have to deal with that one person, that one relationship. And so he has books where there is political maneuvering. But because he has a singular character that the main characters interact with in terms of politics,
yeah.
it never becomes overwhelming. It never bogs the story down. Because at that point, it's not the characters dealing with a system. It's the characters dealing with a relationship. And that is a very different thing from as far as storytelling goes. I want to transition slightly here.
Yeah.
Please. And I want to talk about this new kind of fiction
yeah.
that is growing like weeds. It is showing up everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's called progression or
yeah.
progression fantasy. And it's fascinating because the point of the story is on expansive change over time. The point of the stories is not this character has to go defeat the evil tyrant and throw the ring into Mount Doom, right? That is a quest. That's not what this is. Instead, it's episodic. It's a ton of tyrants. It's
yeah.
a ton of rings that have to go into Mount Doom.
Yeah.
And the point of the story is the change in the character or the change that the character is creating in the world as they do this over and over and over and over again. And so it's creating these stories where the excitement is in the change on a macro scale. It's about something growing and evolving and developing. But what's interesting is that it still only deals with one system. Whatever system is allowing the main character to gain strength over time becomes the only system that is important. Everything else is just thrown to the wayside, and you don't have to be concerned about it. You don't have to worry about it. Political system in a city, it doesn't matter if the main character is going to beat them. and move on.
Yeah.
And so it's a very different kind of world building, but it's becoming increasingly popular as I think people really want, there's catharsis in it because it gives a feeling of growth and leveling up and improving and conquering the world that I feel like a lot of people our age and younger wish that they had,
yeah,
but don't have.
That's like that slow brew incremental growth. There's something about that just makes me sad that there's such a craving for that.
It's yes.
Like, I just want a story about somebody who gradually wakes up on time. Or like learns to finish
right.
their assigned work or something
yeah.
like that. No, it's I'm sure it's bigger than that, but still like that.
Yeah,
that
most of the time there are swords and magic and
swords and that.
Monsters to kill.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's attractive. And I think that's attractive mm-hmm. for a lot of like RPG stuff,
you right.
know, a lot of RPG elements and feeling this sense of
right.
the growth and progression.
But what's fascinating about it is that in the quest to defeat the tyrant,
yeah.
the main character doesn't become a better person. They just become more powerful. That's what's weird about it. So almost always, progression fantasy follows what's called a flat character arc.
Yeah.
Okay, so there are three kinds of character arcs or three general character arcs. Positive growth, negative growth, and flat.
Yeah.
Positive, the character ends up in a better place. Negative, they double down on the lie
yeah,
that they believe.
Yeah, yeah.
And flat, they don't change, but the world changes around them because of them. And so that's, and so a lot of these stories are just a flat character arc where this person is rolling through the world and they are growing because they have some sort of system that allows them to grow and it impacts the world around them. But it is unbelievable how popular this is becoming. It is unbelievable where we're starting to see these sorts of progression ideas pop up in stories.
So it sounds a little bit like if you're looking to break into writing and you have an interest in this sort of expanding flat character arc world mm-hmm. progression sort of thing, you'll want to take some of these lessons to heart because it's again this focus on a singular system, right? So it
right.
sounds to me it's like a way to think about it is you can form a lot of relationships. You only want to form a few systems.
Yes.
Right? Like relationships
yes.
trump systems in the way that
yes.
you develop your world building. And if you can, because a lot of my desire for the tea drinking thing was the place, my world building in there is strong, cozy vibes. That's where I went with it. There's nothing in my adventure module that says that. It's just what I wanted to do. And so that was something that fit with my theme and aesthetic. And it was a sort of relational moment describing mm-hmm. a character's engagement with this particular thing. I was not seeking to then elaborate on where they get the tea from or how they get a hold of it or how much it costs or anything like that. It was mm-hmm. simply a moment in time that reflected the theme. And again, it's this kind of warmth and this relational mm-hmm. kind of sense to it. And that's really where Terry Pratchett excels.
Yes.
Is Terry Pratchett establishes relationships without burdening those relationships with an expansive system.
There's no bureaucracy
yeah.
getting in the way of them.
Yeah. And systems are fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like we like systems.
We do.
But you want to manage them. There's an economy.
Yeah.
But there seems to be a lot more room for relationship and a lot more room for mm-hmm. story in terms of capacity. And with that, I think we've gotten to, I think, the crux of this.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something like do you think, did I summarize that well or is there
I
another
think you
way
did.
To?
No, I think you summarized it very well.
Yeah.
I think that systems are incredibly important, but are very hard to manage, especially when they start interacting.
Yeah.
It's fine to have an economic system. It's fine to have a political system.
Yeah, especially if that's what your story is about.
Exactly.
And it complements the story.
It's fine to have a military system. If you try to figure out how your military, your economic, and your political systems are all working together, the story is no longer going to be about the person originally thought it was. It is now going to expand to include all of the other players. That those systems...
What's remarkable to me is even as I think about Arcane, they actually had a strong political system. They had technological development in mm-hmm. it, but, and so it was two sort of separate cogs turning, But in each of those cogs, they had a character arc that was weaving through it and showed progression and development through that. And it's fascinating. Right. It seems like your capacity for systems is limited by how expansive your relationships and story arcs are.
Yeah,
like you can start to include more systems if they follow sort of something. They
maybe
have to grow.
It's worth saying, if you're trying to write an epic, obviously your requirements for your systems will be different than if you're writing a cozy mystery.
Yeah.
Those are very different things. An epic fantasy is going to include a lot more of those big, broad stroke things. But where epic fantasy most often fails is in the detail, because people add detail where they should have broad stroke.
Yeah.
Right? Because again, people are interesting to read about. Systems are not always so interesting.
So that about wraps us up. We know that you have 1 million ideas about your world building and that you want to share all of those ideas. But all of them have strings attached that can cause you to lose focus or miss your reader's interest. So where you can, keep your systems simple or limited to what directly impacts the story. And if you must create more, use characters and relationships to elaborate on the given system, rather than exhaustive explanation or a level of intricacy that will be hard to track. Just like Terry Pratchett created zany characters that stood in for his systems like Waste Management, the Thieves Guild, or Onik Morpork's Politics, you can create them in your own setting. Characters and story always trump systems in writing. So there you go. I want to give a special shout out to Steph on our server, who cannot be fired, for giving us the idea for this episode. You should totally join the server, by the way. There's a link in the show notes. For Seth, producer Dave, and editor AJ, I'm James, and this has been another episode of the Worldcraft Club podcast. We hope you'll catch up with us again soon.